I'm speaking today with Zach Snipes. Zach is one of our vegetable specialists, and he's stationed down outside of Charleston at the Coastal Research and Education Center. Zach, thanks so much for joining us. And I think we're going to talk about the elusive but essential summer tomato, because everybody's favorite vegetable, and we wish it were easier to grow. But let's talk about some things we might be able to do so that we can have a little more success. How about it?
Yes, ma'am. Thanks for having me, Amanda. You know, I'm a plant pathologist by training, so I love talking about plant diseases. I'm not so sure the audience loves it, but I do enjoy talking about these diseases.
Well, knowledge is power, right?
That's right.
Okay. So let's talk about some of them. Which one do you want to start with?
Well, there's two diseases that we've gotten a lot of calls about recently, and they're very similar in the symptoms that the plant experiences. But knowing the difference between the two is critical in the way we manage the disease.
Oh.
So the two diseases are southern blight and then bacterial wilt.
Okay.
And so southern blight is a fungal disease, and then obviously bacterial wilt is a bacterial disease. Both, what happens is you have a growing season, your plants look good and green, you're happy, you're starting to, you know, kind of count how many tomatoes you're going to have. And then all of a sudden, you might notice your plant kind of looks dull. Maybe it's a little droopy one day, and you think, oh, it can bounce back. And then maybe 2 or 3 days later, you got complete wilt. And within 4 or 5 days, you know, you have a brown, dead plant. And you just have to pick what tomatoes are on it and have fried green tomatoes at that point. So it's a very devastating disease because it shows up so late into the season.
Really? Okay. And yep. Why does it take a long time to show up, Zach?
Well, you got to think, to compromise that entire plant, especially a plant that, you know, is 4, 5, 6 feet tall, it's going to take a while for that pathogen to, really build up and then get inside the plant and take over the machinery of the plant. So that is going to take a while. But unfortunately, when the plant has a heavy fruit set, you know, it gets a lot hotter outside, so yes. The plant is going to be a little more stressed because of the production that's going through and the environmental stress. And so that's when the bacteria or the fungus really jumps on the plant and causes them to collapse.
Is there anything we can do to help it? And is it worse during certain weather conditions or environmental conditions? So I guess, is it worse in environmental conditions certain times, and then is there a treatment that the homeowner could use?
Yeah, so we typically see these diseases in places that tomatoes or anything else in the solanaceous family have been growing. And so crop rotation is very important. But what you're going to see is in wetter soils, you're going to see the bacterial wilt show up first. So if you have a low spot in your field, it'll show up there, and then it kind of migrates out. We call it running down the row. In the tomato fields, you know, it starts on one plant and then it goes both directions. So you're going to see it in the wetter parts of the field. Southern blight is a little more sporadic. Typically, you don't see clumps of plants, but you'll see one plant here and then maybe 20 feet, you'll see another plant. It's a little more random about where it is in the field.
So are they pathogens that are the bacterial wilt is in the soil, is that correct?
Correct. Both of them are in the soil. They're both soil-borne pathogens.
Both of them.
And they persist for years and years and years. I was in a commercial field the other day that hadn't been planted in 12 or 15 years, and they planted tomatoes, and they got bacterial wilt in this field after 15 years. So the pathogen is there in the soil, unfortunately. But knowing the difference between the diseases goes a long way in how you're going to manage it for next year, because there's nothing we can do this year once you notice it, but the following season you can't manage it.
So, okay. And what would you do, Zach?
Well, the first thing is proper identification. So southern blight, some people call it southern stem blight. If you look at the base of the plant, you'll see this white mycelial mat. So it'll just be this mat of just white strands. And then I call them like BBs or fertilizer pellets, or it looks like little Milo or sorghum.
Yeah.
BBs that are on it. Those are actually the sclerotia, and those are survival structure of the fungus when we're talking about southern blight.
Uh-huh.
And those are in the soil, and when you have a host and the conditions are right, they basically germinate. Think of like a seed germinating, and they start taking over the plant. So when you pull back the plastic or the mulch from around your tomato plants, you'll see this white mycelial growth all over the plant.
Okay.
And that's how you distinguish southern blight from bacterial wilt. Now, bacterial wilt, you won't see any of that fungal mat or anything like that. You'll just maybe see some kind of darker, greasy-looking spots on the plant.
Huh.
The way to distinguish that from other diseases, if you take that stem of the tomato and cut it open and cut about a 3 to 4 inch piece, and you put it in a clear jar, a glass jar of water, this cool thing, I guess it's cool, happens. It's called bacterial streaming.
Oh.
So you'll have this clear, white, milky ooze kind of come out from the bottom of the plant where you cut it. And if you see that, then that's a definitely a distinguishable fact of bacterial wilt.
Okay. And then the southern stem blight, Tony Melton talks about, for a homeowner, he often suggests wrapping the stem very loosely in foil and burying part of it below the soil line and having part of that aluminum foil extend upward. Is that I guess there's a reason for that.
Correct. Yeah. So southern blight, those little sclerotia, when they germinate,
yes,
they are looking for tissue to infect. And so whether maybe you planted the plant and you have a little wound on the plant, or where you pruned it and you have a little wound, or any weak spot in the plant, that's where that sclerotia is going to germinate and get into the plant. And so by wrapping aluminum foil around it and then planting it in the soil, you create a physical barrier between the pathogen and the plant itself. And so that will definitely help with managing the disease. Another thing that helps is grafting.
Oh.
And grafting will also help with bacterial wilt. But the reason it's so important to know which disease you have is some of the rootstocks that we use in grafting are specific to resistance for southern blight, and some are specific to bacterial wilt. And so if you don't distinguish the disease, you could buy the wrong rootstock, pay a lot of money for it, and it still die.
So are there some rootstocks that have resistance to both?
There are some, but they're very hard to find. And a lot of the nurseries and places that produce them, you just tell them what disease you have, and then they'll give you the proper rootstock, because a lot of them are just numbers. There's no need for them to have a fancy name.
Well, Zach, since for a home gardener, it wouldn't be too hard for me to use the aluminum foil if I could only choose one thing for resistance. If I wanted to spend the money and get a grafted plant, it might be better for me to get the one with resistance to bacterial wilt, because I could use that aluminum foil. Does that seem like a strategy?
Correct. You could battle both diseases by getting resistance to bacterial wilt in the rootstock and then using the aluminum foil technique for the southern blight aspect of the disease.
But I guess somebody who's growing 2 or 3 acres, they just can't go out there and do all that, I wouldn't think.
Correct. And so they have to use grafted plants. It's a better method just for time and money sake. And there's a couple of places you can buy the grafted plants,
uh-huh,
online retailers. There's a couple of greenhouses up in North Carolina that are doing them, and people are having really good luck with it. I have a couple of growers that buy from there, and they've been very, very happy.
Now, the grafted plants are certainly more expensive, and so your growers who are choosing those, are they going to go for the wonderful heirloom flavor tomatoes? Is that what they would want to, because they can get so much more when they're sold?
Correct. Yeah, because of the price, because when you graft, you have to grow two plants, and then there's a process to actually cut them and heal them, and it's a very labor-intensive, expensive product. And so you'll want to grow something that you're going to get your money back on as a grower. So they're growing the heirloom type, the fancy type. They're selling to restaurants and retailers, uh-huh, and even at farmers markets, because you get a higher price than if you box them up and sell them wholesale on the Columbia market or even to a distributor. And so For the larger tomato growers, it's not economically feasible yet. I think one day we're going to get there, but we're just not there right now.
Does the rootstock, is it just a more vigorous rootstock in general too? Because grafted tomatoes seem kind of, I mean, the heirloom tomatoes seem like they kind of have a, I don't mean to say wimpy, but they're
rootstock. Yeah, wimpy is the right word. Yeah, if you look at an heirloom tomato plant the wrong way, it might die. So the rootstocks are more vigorous just in nature. They put out typically more roots. They take up nutrients and water better. They're less prone to lodging or falling over. And so it's just a healthier overall plant when you're grafting it. And then the scion or the top part of the plant can just be itself and produce tomatoes. And a lot of times what we see is we actually see increased yields with the grafted plants.
Okay. And now so many people are putting in raised beds because everybody during this COVID-19 situation is at home more and showing more interest in gardening. If you had a bed with all new soil, if you had a small enough raised bed that you brought in just potting soil and some compost, would that give you a year of not having to worry about these two soil-borne issues?
Yes, it's going to buy you some time. And the reason I say that is because if you use the same tools from last year and you had infestation, you just spread it. If, you bring in topsoil, a lot of people purchase topsoil to put in raised beds, which I'd recommend against.
Yes.
You could be bringing it in from somewhere else. And then the last thing, if your raised beds aren't deep enough, there's not enough volume, and those tomato roots are going to go down into the native soil that you have, and they can pick up the disease there. And so, there's a lot of things you can do, like closing off the bed, disinfecting your tools from every time you use them, and it's going to buy you some time.
But, I just think it's remarkable that now there are some places where we homeowners can order some. You said that Johnny's Seed is one of the places that offers this?
Yep, Johnny Seed Online is the only one that I know of that sells them to the consumer. Banner Greenhouses up in North Carolina, they do grafted plants, but you have to buy, there's a certain minimum that you have to buy. So maybe go in with a garden club or some friends and get a big order of a couple hundred plants. But you'll be really impressed with these plants. They do really well. And it's not the silver bullet. I mean, you still are going to get foliar diseases and things like that, the bacterial spot and things. But they do a really good job against the disease if you know what disease and you buy the correct plant.
And the bacterial spot you and I talked about earlier in a short interview, there's no resistance for that at all. And you said all we can do with that one is know how to identify it. And try, if we see it, or even before we see it, there are some products that are safe when used according to the label for homeowners that could help stave it off for a little while, give some protection to the plant. Okay.
Right. And with that disease, you're just buying time. You want the tomato to fruit and get all the energy and nutrients into the tomato itself. And so, spraying preventively on 7 to 10 to 14 days, depending on how rainy it is, program in copper and mancozeb. You should be rotating those two products, and they're relatively safe. You can, if you follow the label and follow the pre-harvest intervals.
And why is it important to rotate the two, Zach?
When we don't rotate, and the same thing can be spoken for grafted plants, because I don't think we've been doing it long enough, but these pathogens are in the soil, and they are designed to live, to make it to the next generation.
Yes.
And so when we use one, let's say, rootstock, or when we use one chemical against a pathogen, over time, there's going to be a few that kind of escape it, that aren't as sensitive to it anymore. And then when you keep spraying for it, those ones are going to live and repopulate, and then all of a sudden you have a resistant population, which none of the products that you're using can control. So when we rotate these chemicals, this mancozeb and copper and other products, all that's doing is keeping the pathogen on its toes. It's changing over time.
So, Zach, if according to what the label says is how frequently to make a spray, would you use one for one spray and then the next spray use the other and just keep kind of shifting back and forth between the two?
Correct. That's exactly what I would do. Yep.
All right. Well, I want to thank you because this will help the backyard tomato, but even more so, agriculture is so critical to the economy of our state. And our growers are the ones that, I mean, they're the ones I'm most vested in because I want them to be successful so that we can continue to have this healthy economy based on agriculture and that we, and the people who are putting their hearts and souls into it can be successful and hopefully pass it on to future generations. The young people like you, Zach. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you, Amanda.